From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 434, PowerShell for Azure with guest Brian Lewis. Recorded Wednesday, August 12th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Plop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Brian Lewis. Brian, this is your home region, right?
This is my home region.
You're here,
yes.
here in Wisconsin. Where are you actually based out of Minneapolis?
I'm based out of Pewaukee, Wisconsin. There's a Milwaukee office in a little town called Pewaukee.
Pewaukee, near Milwaukee.
Near Milwaukee.
Okay, yeah. That's great. And what do you do for Microsoft?
I'm an IT pro evangelist. So I basically evangelize on the IT pro stack.
Which is good because we're talking to a bunch of IT pros these days. Although it seems like the stacks are coming closer together, especially in like the Azure space. There's a big collision between development and operations there.
There's a huge collision in Azure. Yeah. Definitely.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Well, it's actually got me learning a lot more development as well.
Interesting. Well, but PowerShell is coding. You know, more and more, we want to call it scripting, but there's an awful lot of scripts get to a point where it's like, that's a program.
Right. Well, the thing about PowerShell, which is powerful, is it's an object-oriented scripting language.
Right.
So they're objects. They're not really scripts.
Yeah.
So my variables, whatever I create, it's actually a thing that I can hit a period at the end of, and then all the different attributes pop up.
Right.
Right.
Everything that's in there is available to you, and it's a lot of stuff. And for the most part, the Microsoft product lines have embraced PowerShell in a big way.
Yeah, they have. I mean, that's actually one of the common criteria for shipping a product now is as you manage it,
mm-hmm.
you write PowerShell to manage it. When you do your GUI, you basically have the GUI end with executing a PowerShell.
Calling PowerShell.
Yeah.
And I think IIS was one of the first to the table implementing that well. Conversations I've had over the past few weeks, we've talking about the struggles with SQL Server, because SQL Server's always had its own scripting language.
Right.
You know, already, which I think most SQL Server folks are very comfortable with. It's just getting it to play well in PowerShell as well is challenging.
Well, so they've added PowerShell to SQL as well, right?
Yeah.
And, and they were an early adopter of it. So, a little different run engine, in that spot.
Yeah, but a little bit of difference. So PowerShell and Azure, I don't necessarily equate those two together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know I can use PowerShell to call, you know, to construct stuff to run in Azure, but can you control Azure itself?
Yeah. So everything you can do in the Azure graphical environment, mm-hmm. you can do from a PowerShell command prompt. And you can do more from PowerShell than you can actually do in the graphical areas.
Interesting. So the console is a subset of the overall feature set that's available in PowerShell.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, the way both of them work is they call an API set.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no APIs that the graphical environment calls that we don't have a PowerShell command written for to call that API set
right.
as well.
And so you may actually have access to more features in the API than what they've necessarily figured out how to do in the GUI.
Right. Oh, so the API has all the features.
Right.
And then, generally they write a PowerShell command that hits all those APIs, but there may be an API or two. I'm not familiar with any, but there may be an API or two that aren't in any of those
right.
environments and you just have to write your own program to do. But everything you can do in the graphical environment can be done from the command prompt. And the
nice.
Way to do that, you just add the modules. You go to the Azure website, downloads, and you run an install.
So a set of PowerShell modules?
To add the PowerShell modules
right.
to your PowerShell environment.
So you add Azure PowerShell modules to your PowerShell environment so that you're basically able to call those API calls with PowerShell.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Once you add them, once you run the install, when it finishes, you'll be able to do a lot of new commands, and they'll be there because it'll import the modules. So then if I want to do Azure, you know, get-Azure VM, we'll list all my Azure VMs, and then it will return your Azure VMs. You can grab one of them and then say, you know, add a disk or you know, whatever you want to do to it. So you
right.
can build them, you can start them, create new ones. You can create networks, you can create firewalls.
Well, I'm always of the mindset if we build scripts because we have a repeating process that we want to be sure works perfectly every time. So what's, I guess now it makes me think about what am I doing repetitively in Azure?
So there's lots of things you might do repetitively. For one, if you're building a developer environment,
right,
you want to spin up a couple of different servers, maybe three-tier architecture, whatever you're doing.
So automated deploy, continuous integration kind of thinking, right?
Exactly. And they're the same every time.
Right.
You know, every time I use a GUI, sometimes may click a different spot.
Yeah. You might just slip, much less anything else.
Right.
So.
And it takes longer because, you know, I have to go next finish as opposed to execute the script and come back 5 minutes later and have it all built.
In the continuous deployment world, we've been talking about this whole, if you're using a Word doc, you failed. Right? Like, right. Don't have separate documentation on what to do. Write the tools that simply do it. And that's, I guess, is PowerShell, right? PowerShell could be part of that overall execution plan.
For us, I mean, definitely that's the way to go. You know, the days of our old Visual Basic scripting, those are over, I hope. I mean, I never liked Visual Basic Script to begin with. I'd rather do it in like VB.net.
Yes, I remember VB Script, but it was also a language that encouraged you to keep your scripts to yourself. Now, this idea of actually sharing scripts, of having multiple people or owning scripts, I've done some shows around this where we're talking about like source control on your PowerShell scripts, that we maintain versions and we know who did the modification and so forth. That just never happened in VB Script land.
Yeah, I don't know if that was an aspect of the scripting language itself or just an aspect of the times, because it was different back then as far as IT pros didn't do. I don't think I ever heard the term source control back then.
But for that audience, but it also wasn't a language that was conducive to really reuse. It was good at doing exactly the same thing over and over again, but PowerShell is much better at go get the names of this stuff. Like your sets can change and it'll still execute.
Right.
Where in older scripting languages, it was much harder to have any tolerance to variation.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Reuse in different environments, yeah. Different server names.
And okay. I always had a strong programming bent when I was doing IT work. So I would write code that would generate code often, right? That would actually go read a bunch of data and spit out lines of scripting code, and then you could run it. So it was sort of regenerable script, but that's not normal.
Right? No, and no, that doesn't sound normal.
The piping technique of PowerShell is a lot more sensible to say, okay, go get a list of users under this criteria and then pipe that to, I want you to make this change to them.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of the code is completely reusable from environment to environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and that's, you know, also grown this whole culture where I just don't write PowerShell scripts from scratch anymore. You search first.
Yeah.
You're not that unique a snowflake, you know. You could go out there. Somebody's done what you've needed to do before and they've got a script for you.
In the IT pro world, I think whenever we program, that's what we do is we start with a Google search, maybe on Bing, but still, right. we do a search.
A Bingle search.
And, we do that search, find some code examples and cut and paste it. Plagiarism is, you know, rampant.
Sorry.
When we do that.
Immature poets imitate. Mature poets steal.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. We're mature definitely. Poets. Just steal it.
Yep. Well, you know, I've talked to programmers and they don't, from the classes, they say they don't teach the bubble sort and the this sort and the that sort like they used to. When I went to programming school, you know, we had to figure that out. And part of the class was, figure out the sort that does this best.
Right.
And nowadays it seems like it's reusable code built into, you know, into your developer environment. And you just choose the sort.
Yeah. Well, stuff is fast enough, right? This wasn't about optimizing every cycle out of a computer. It was about what's maintainable? What do we know is going to work every day? It's fast enough. You don't have to worry about that optimization. The far bigger problem is repeatability, maintainability. That's the headache today is if I don't give the developer exactly the same dev environment from a test of software and he's going to get a whole new set of failures and he's going to wonder what the heck happened.
Right.
Right. How often do we chase our tails on a deployment because we changed something in the configuration? Right. And it manifests itself as a coding error. You know, it's object not found or some other message. It takes time to back up and go, you didn't deploy this the same way.
Yeah. Well, that's what PowerShell does way better than the Visual Basic scripting is I can read it.
Yeah.
I can debug your code usually.
Yeah.
You know, and,
it's not that easy to obscure stuff in PowerShell. I mean, you can get some weird piping commands and stuff, but other than that, it's not too bizarre.
Well, if you want to make it readable, it's easy to do.
Yeah. So that's the strength. So, I mean, beyond automated deployment, I think everybody gets that's hugely valuable, that repeatable process and so forth. Can you talk to me about sort of expected things I would do in the Azure environment on the IT side that I'd want scripted and repeatable every time?
Well, from deployment is certainly one.
Yeah.
The other aspect I use a lot of PowerShell for, I don't know if it's necessarily that I'm looking to repeat it. There's no other way to do it. So,
right.
For example, if I want to reserve an IP address, that's a virtual IP address or a VIP, basically an external internet addressable IP address.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to reserve that is in PowerShell right now.
There's no GUI
graphical
on that.
Environment on
it. Nice. So some of these features that only exist in that place.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of features only exist in that.
That's one. And you want to name a couple others off the top of your head?
They keep getting rid of it. So one was doing reserving an internal IP address, but
right.
They did add that to
now
the new,
added
to the new preview portal.
So you've got this battle going on of them adding new features into the API and then quickly putting PowerShell onto it and the GUI guys catching up.
Right.
Sort of a shifting window of what's new that isn't yet GUIized.
Yeah. And the thing is, they'll never get there with the GUI, right? Because it's just, you can't build a GUI to do everything and have it a usable graphical environment.
Yeah, actually have it manageable.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, you want to keep the GUI environment simpler for the normal cases, the stuff that, especially when you're starting out, just make it easy to do. Reserving an IP address isn't something you do every day. Like, that's something, it's okay that the few times you need to do it, you've got to write a PowerShell command for that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking in terms of, like, when you onboard a user, well, you don't really need to touch Azure directly for that. A lot of that is just all done through AD.
Right. Yeah. No, there's nothing from the regular OS or whatever you run within there, whether
right.
it's Linux or Windows. You run those environments just as you normally do. That it's the infrastructure that you set up the first time. If you compare it to on-premises, when I rack my servers, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I set my VMs,
the provisioning of a server environment is just now the provisioning of a VM set. What about elasticity? Do you see a need for, every time I've ever played with, I don't see folks actually doing automated elasticity, like, oop, load's going up, add a server. It's more, hey, it's Saturday, the big campaign is coming, over-provision. And they go into the GUI and just put the sliders to the right. Because those VMs don't cost much if they're not being used, and if you do need them, they're already lit and ready to go.
So you can, they certainly can cost a lot of money when you leave them run for the whole month, and I've had that happen where it drains my account.
Surprise!
Yeah. I always had to remember to turn those off after I do that. So I have one running right now that's actually a nice expensive one because I've got a demo coming up later this afternoon.
Oh, right.
But I turned it on this morning, so.
Okay, so you're not in that much trouble with it.
Yeah. But, so as far as the provisioning of different sizes or scaling, it kind of comes to, in IaaS, we don't do that much
because
programs aren't built for that, right? Whereas if we look at the Microsoft built Azure for a PaaS space, right? Because we thought, hey, let's do something really brilliant and build for the future. And we built PaaS.
Right.
Google did the same.
Yes.
Amazon did something different. They built for IaaS.
Well, they came first. You know, they were really into this game and that was,
we were going to jump them, right? They're doing last year's stuff.
Right.
And then everybody bought last year's stuff,
yes.
right? Because infrastructure as a service works with all of our apps that we currently have.
Sure.
Now, it doesn't, if you're running Exchange or some other, you know, CRM app, it doesn't work really nicely to say, oh, you want to scale higher? Let me just throw another 10 servers at it. Let me throw another 20 servers
right.
at it. PaaS, that works.
Yes.
And so we still think the future might be PaaS, but customers voted with their dollars and infrastructure as a service is what is winning today.
Well, and it's easier to buy, too. And speaking of that, let me pay the bills here by saying that Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at ScriptRock.com/RUNASRADIO. I have certainly had the experience of taking a virtual machine running IIS with a dozen websites on it and moving that as a VM into Azure and then carving each one of those websites off as an Azure website. And the goal to be to retire the VM, that I'm really transforming from IIS to PaaS by doing that.
Right.
But you know, each site might have a violation that Azure websites won't tolerate. Like if you're writing on the disk somewhere in that web page, that's a problem. You know, you're not allowed to do that.
So there's definitely certain things you can't do when you move that. But when you get there, the beauty of it is to be able to set that. You know, you mentioned sliding that slider to scale more. in a web space, that works great. You can even set it that, hey, if CPU hits high or if number of connections hits high, just automatically add another VM or another instance, basically.
Right. But this sort of idea of algorithmic elasticity, how do you assess that your site is busy, which turns out to be a harder problem than you realize, and then how do you respond to that? And the other direction, too. How many do you turn on and how many shut down?
Right. But the nice thing is it'll do it.
Yeah.
Versus what would happen in the past is, you know, when you do hit the slam rate, you just basically start issuing, you can't connect.
Yeah.
And your site's down.
You're just firefighting. Do you do a lot of that with PowerShell? I mean, we're describing it as a slider because that's the only way I've ever seen it done is using the GUI.
Yeah, you can set that. You can, like I said, you can set anything that you can do in the GUI in PowerShell.
Right.
So you can set that in PowerShell. If you wanted to, from a, you know, poor man's metric too, you don't have to use Azure tooling to give yourself more VMs.
Right.
You could be running your own metrics and basically issue a script that then spins up another.
Right. It's always a question of how do you know when it's time to light another instance? And you can't just light, lighting another instance is also adding it to the load balancing pool. Like there's a lot of niggling details. Like one of the things I like about the GUI is I just move that slider and all of those calls got made. If you're going to start writing this in PowerShell, you're now responsible for execute the VM, get it into an operable state, know what its IP is, add it to the to the virtual pool. You know, there's
so if
a bunch
doing,
steps.
If you're doing IaaS, that's totally correct.
Yeah.
And even in IaaS where we use the slider,
yeah.
You've got to build your own VMs if you're doing your own virtual machine.
Right.
You're the one who has to make sure they're exactly the same and all that stuff.
Yes.
The nice thing is when you move to websites, we basically have a VHD file that is your
base image.
Base directory store. Not the image of the OS. It's just your base IaaS website, you know, web root.
Right.
And then basically all the different servers refer to that same one.
Right.
So as we spin ones up, it's really simple.
You're actually reading from the same file every time. You're not even making copies of the file.
Like, not
why would you bother?
There's no reason to.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And so that makes it simple.
Yeah.
If you're doing your own VMs, that makes it more difficult.
Yeah.
You've got to have them all patched the same. You got to have, you know, otherwise I go to the website and I get a page different than the same time I go to the same web page.
Yes.
And that.
Oh, had that experience, right?
That could be a problem.
And do you have the load balancing configured correctly? Is the state being managed external to the website or is it internal? Do you have to be, when somebody starts a session with a service, do you have to stay with that server? You know, that all of those rules.
All those fun rules.
I'm just having flashbacks now. It's making me sad.
Yeah, that stickiness that used to be, and still, you know, is nice for speed of staying is important. But, you know, that's the thing with the PaaS environment or even with the, IIS. If you're doing stateless connections.
Right.
It doesn't matter what
doesn't
server
matter.
You hit.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if the server crashes. You just hit another one.
Well, that's always been the thing I've described. It's like, look, you only scale to multiple servers because you want to be fast, fault tolerant, and be able to continuously update the site without taking anybody down. And if you're sticky to any server, you can't do any of those things.
Right.
All of those things are actually impaired. So.
And so many traditional programs in the infrastructure space actually do have those sticky needs.
They count on state being with the process.
Right.
They just expect that to be true, and it causes a lot of problems when you really want to scale the thing.
Yep. So that makes internet scale hard.
Yeah. Well, and it generally thinking in terms of cloud, it's like you want to be in this environment that puts you on a path to success. It's like, oh, we've been so successful, now we're failing. So we have to change the way we do things while we're at in theory, the peak of our success. We have to rewrite the whole thing.
Well, I actually explain when I talk about IaaS, PaaS, SaaS, infrastructure service, platform as a service, and software as a service. I like to use examples of like CRM. And if you look at CRM, you've got Microsoft CRM.
Yep.
Which is really, if you run it on premises, it's a traditional infrastructure app.
Yep. It's got a SQL Server on the back end. It's got a bunch of web services in the front end.
Yep.
It's exactly what you expect.
And if you buy it from Microsoft and have us run it for you, that's a software as a service where
right.
we take care of it and you only have to worry about your users and your authorizations.
Yeah, we pay per user basically.
Right. But if you look at a competitor like Salesforce,
right.
Salesforce is actually a PaaS application.
Yeah.
And so, but they don't sell it to you to run on premises as a PaaS application. You buy it from them as a software as a service.
Right.
So,
why is it PaaS then if it's software as a service?
Well, the interesting thing is they can then update their app while you're logged into it.
While you're still using it, yeah.
Because it's stateless and it doesn't have those issues that
right.
the old traditional ones do. So, for example, if we want to update Microsoft CRM, well, we got to shut down the SQL Server, we got to shut down the
right.
things and change the code and then bring it back up. Salesforce wouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
They can basically just take the server, upgrade it.
Well, you guys do this with Exchange Online too, right? I mean, Exchange Online is being updated all the time. You have no control over what it's updated at. You don't care. Your mailbox keeps running.
Well, and that's the beauty of software as a service.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is we at Microsoft care if it's infrastructure or platform as a service because it's how much work we have to do to keep our software as a service up and running.
To keep it actually going.
Yeah.
So from an engineering perspective, like you want to be on PaaS just because it's built to have continuous uptime.
Right. It, from a lifecycle standpoint of an application, and a lot of us are moving to look at application lifecycle.
Yeah.
And you can continually update and you can continually, they're throwing metrics in there so that you can say, hey, wait, that patch you just rolled out in the middle of the day, as opposed to on the weekend, is starting to cause some degradation in you know, performance. We're going to roll it back.
Right.
And we can even point the programmers to, hey, this section of code is where you're starting to have a problem.
So we're having pain. And I'm always loath to roll back. I'm almost like, well, we're having performance degradations. Let's just throw more instances at it.
If it's acceptable performance degradation, if it's killing the site.
Yeah, then that's another thing entirely.
But the fact that you can do that in the middle of the day is a huge game changer for
us. This is when we get into that DevOps mentality of, you know, continuously deploying new things. And if the guys think they can get it fixed in the next few hours faster than we could do the rollback, well, we'll just roll forward.
And, yeah.
You know, give us the next one and the next one. When it comes to rolling updates like that, even in a PaaS environment, I mean, you're taking an existing website that people are using, you've got a new version going up. What does it look like to script over? Like, what is the tactic you take to launch that, get that new site running? Is it just a new set of VMs or a new set of website instances and then you flop the DNS across? Or are you actually changing over the website instances you're currently using?
So it depends, you know, so we've got a thing called slots in the Azure websites.
Right.
And basically what that does is that has two different, disk routes of the web server and just swaps them.
Right.
And it will actually run, and when it swaps them, it swaps the DNS names is really what it's doing to it.
Okay.
Because, as you have your website or your slot up and running and your website up and running, you can hit the slot that's, your staged slot.
Right.
To test, to make sure everything's working. So it's up and running as its own web server right now. And then when we do the swap, we basically take production and put that into the slot and we take the slot and have that production.
Put it in production.
But they haven't changed from the engine they're running on or the memory
really
that they're loaded
going
in.
Going anywhere. It's almost like you just flipped over the...
You're swapping their name.
The names.
Yep. You're taking the two people standing in front of you, you grab their name tags on their shirts and you switch them. And that's it.
And so, there's still a challenge there when you do state management and so forth. Like the new version may have different rules. So, but it is a one way pass. All of a sudden you're running on the next version. So hopefully they've written the codes like, oh, we're in the newer version. So these things are different.
Right.
And you know, I would think purely in context of something like carrying the shopping cart across from one version to another. So,
that's a point in the development. You know, if you look at the PaaS environments, the downside of PaaS is they've got SDKs and,
right.
And, it's not like I can go take my web server code that I've run on IIS and I can usually put to Apache or some other web server, or even, other apps that I can, you know, put to different servers. This is you've written PaaS for Azure or you've written PaaS for someone else's architecture.
Yes.
They don't intermingle.
They don't mix. No.
But everybody builds into it the requirement of stateless.
Right.
That's in their SDK that it's got to be stateless.
Yeah.
So they always can move like that.
They have a tolerance for that. It's still.
I guess a programmer might be able to break that.
Sure.
If they really tried.
Well, you think about the structure of a shopping cart in V2 of your site, and now you're going to jump up to V3, and in V3, there's a new criteria required for every item in the shopping cart. And so all of a sudden the guy's on the new version and his cart's empty because all of those entries were invalid. You know, he's just got to write some code to go, well, we might be moving from 2. So if that value is not there, here's the default value to put into it.
Yeah. No, that certainly is something programmers have to worry about.
Yeah, developers can find a way to break stuff. They're good at that.
Yeah.
You know, there's always an option there, but it is something to think about in terms of if we're doing those continuous updates, how do we make sure, you know, that people get carried across? I don't want to throw everybody's carts away on a busy site. That's bad.
That wouldn't be good to lower our revenue.
You probably noticed that and that'd be a little blip in sales at that particular moment. Guy one item away from actually making a purchase and you updated the website and toss his cart out.
Well, in the past, you know, the developers might be able to see that, but us infrastructure folk usually couldn't see that.
Right.
nowadays, with if you start to get into the PaaS environment, you will be able to have access to that if you're interested in running those reports.
And it's sort of the attitude of dashboarding in general, to just be nice to have a real-time view of what's going on in that particular app.
Right, yeah, because there's always been that argument between the developers and the IT environment, because whose fault is it when the app doesn't run? We'd always say, the programmer wrote a bad app.
Yeah.
The developers would be like, they're doing something wrong. They need a bigger server. They need whatever.
Yeah. If you'd set up a better system, we wouldn't have had these problems.
Right.
If you implemented crappy code, yeah, now you can absolutely get into that fight over and over and over again.
So it helps to have those dashboards to direct that. I'm sure the arguments will still happen.
Yeah. But it's nice to have a copy of the truth.
Right.
Right. Like, this is what good instrumentation on a site in the field gives you a better sense of what was actually going on. It's a little less guessing and more, these are the log entries.
Here right, and a lot faster than searching through logs. And,
yeah.
And so when you do your postmortem on what happened, you can figure it out a lot quicker. And hopefully get it up, the site back working quicker. Yeah,
I hope so. So, I mean, from a PowerShell perspective, this is pretty easy. Everything you'd ever wanted to do in Azure, you can do in the command line with PowerShell.
That's right, yeah.
And it's just a question of thinking through the particular workflows you want to do. And a lot of that workflow sounds simplified now for playing in the PaaS universe. You don't have to write the plumbing for adding additional instances to a website. You know, it's a single command. It's not complicated.
Right. Yeah, no, Azure and PowerShell are a great marriage in that respect. And,
yeah.
But PowerShell in itself, IT pros are moving more and more to it, and which is great to see.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing conversation with us, is the aspects of development that IT pro folks are taking on because they want to do PowerShell properly. They want something sustainable, source control and things like that, testing. You know, I've had a long conversation about Pester, which is a testing framework for PowerShell.
I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, Pester. Good Pester. Name. Yeah. So we're in a weird world. In some ways, I mean, I'm old enough that I remember when it was, you know, we were doing everything. Everybody knew how to code and everybody was running the infrastructure as well, right? You see this in the startup culture, just the no ops mindset of, if it's only you and another guy, as long as it's a table for two, you're doing everything.
You do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's all your fault one way or the other. So, you know, you're always in contact with people, but it feels like we're getting back to that mindset of everybody owning the whole stack.
You know, it depends where you are. Yeah. Enterprise accounts don't do that.
No.
I mean, but in the smaller environments, they certainly do, and tons of the upstarts do. I see it a lot. But, it just makes sense. When I worked at a 12-person company, I was the director of IT, whatever I really wanted to give myself the title.
Pick a title.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, we've got too many VPs, so, you know.
Try something else.
Try something, yeah. But whatever you want. So the thing is, I was at an independent physician association,
mm-hmm.
and I did all the IT work, and I was the only IT guy initially. I was also the only man. So in addition to my role of keeping all the machines working and running the, cutting the checks with the computer system and
right.
writing reports to do things, find out what's going on in the company, and database backups, et cetera. My other job was to, plunge the toilet or do any of the light bulb changes or any of that kind of stuff.
Kill all the spiders?
Yeah. We were in a basement, as a matter of fact, and I did have to do that. Yes. So the funny thing is that when I got a chance to hire somebody, I don't know if it's right, but I hired a guy.
Yeah. And it's like
you are taking over these responsibilities.
Well, you know, but even in bigger organizations, the DevOps movement has been more, I think, a deeper understanding of everybody's role and their overall need to, you know, deliver software successfully. You know, it doesn't matter how much you write if it doesn't run. It doesn't matter what you run if you don't have anything in there.
Right. No, so DevOps is totally moving in that direction.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the large environments, enterprises really embracing DevOps.
Pretty resistant.
Yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has a process. It's right. just a question of how adherent you are to the process, how much you care about that process.
Well, they've been pretty successful with their process too. Yeah. I remember, you know, going, and talking to people and helping them with their exchange environments back in the day.
Yep.
And I remember going to meet with a large customer, and I was meeting with one of their exchange guys, and he had some questions he wanted to run by me. And usually I'm able to help, especially at the mid-size companies.
Sure.
Well, this large company, the guy's only job was the SMTP aspect of Exchange. So he didn't do Exchange all day.
No.
365 days a year, he worked with the SMTP engine.
Just that engine.
Yeah, his questions were way beyond me. So my point is they have their specifications, their specialties,
right.
and and they work pretty well on it. Right? Yeah. They get their job done better than you can do if everybody had worn every hat.
Yeah. Yeah. And you sort of, jack of all trades types can't be good enough at individual things that need to be done when you get to that scale.
Right.
Was there something for him to do in a regular 40-hour work week on SMTP?
I have no idea how hard his job was or how easy it was.
Most exchange people that I've met work really hard and live most of their lives in utter terror.
Yeah. Well, that's the database, guys.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Yeah, it's mail. When it's down, everybody knows, right? Database takes a header, everybody knows. There's no secrets here. It's an immediately apparent thing.
These guys, I have to say, did have more challenges. They have multiple firewalls. They did a lot of network segmentation. I mean, they had their guys working. They kept them busy. And they certainly test everything. This was another thing, is it was in the insurance field. They tested everything at multiple ends before anything was changed or implemented. So it
can't make any mistakes.
No, they wouldn't make any mistakes.
It's really interesting. Hey, Brian, super fun to talk to you. It's one of those conversations where we've been doing this long enough that you could go off at any tangent at all and keep going. I hope folks are excited about working with PowerShell and Azure, because I think it's an important element of what we can do these days.
I appreciate you having me on the show.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.